Thanks for tuning in to the Vertical Plus podcast. We always open the show with a discussion about this past Sunday's message. If you didn't catch it, you can go back an episode and listen to the audio version. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome to the Vertical Plus podcast. Our guest today, Drew Kleek, sitting across. Whoa.
Sorry.
Whose stomach?
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Loud and clear.
I'm eating a sandwich.
And everybody else did.
I didn't mean to interrupt the Dewey Decimal introduction to this podcast.
I've been watching a lot of Parks and Rec, and you know, everybody on the radio station is like, Welcome to the Vertical Plus podcast. And it's just great. And then
that might be one of the most accurate characters, too, in Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Yes, that's absolutely. Really. Anyway, hey, welcome to Vertical Plus Podcast. Drew Kleek is here, Special Forces Extraordinaire. Very good. Oh, is that the crowd?
That was the crowd.
That was just Drew's
mini children.
This
is the official MLB crowd.
He's feeling a little self-indulgent today. That's all right. We're glad to have him here. No more 3 minutes. And
here we go.
New series, Inward Fire, coming to Fox Network near you because it looks like a TV series.
It really does.
Let's talk about how frustrating the series was for us, though.
Just as a whole.
It's been staring at us for months.
It is the one that when we were planning series back early, like last year, we were like, this is going to be the tough one.
That's going to be the biggest challenge. You know what? It's the biggest series challenge we've had in years. Let's do it in 2020 because why not?
Who are we to know that 2020 would be what it has become?
It feels like God should have warned us.
It depends
like
who you
with
ask.
The rest of the 2020.
It depends who you ask, because some people, I keep getting like YouTube links to prophets and I'm like, would you stop?
Oh man, don't get me on my soapbox when guys are like, it's bad right now and then it's going to get a little better and then it's going to get a lot worse and then things are going to turn for the better. I'm like, what is this? The Wizard of Oz? Like, get off my Facebook feed.
That's what you get for being on Facebook. That one was me. That wasn't Ben's stomach. That was my email. Sorry.
Thank you. It's all right. I was last week, but
so far
heard
this
it.
Feels very professional. So the reason the Inward Fire was so difficult is because it's an awesome idea, but it's a little bit hard to explain.
Whoa! It was Ben's idea. Yeah. That's why it's so awesome.
It actually wasn't my idea. I read it. I read it. A mentor of mine. What do you call those guys? Like author mentors? Yeah. John Elders. He's the only guy I follow, really. There was another guy that I was reading that basically gave a nod to this, that there are things internally inside of you that you have to feed so that they will continue to grow or provide warmth. Then additionally, when you do that, other people in your life are going to be able to get warmth from that same source. Mm. So it was just a really, really intriguing idea. And I thought as we were building those 20 potential series for 2020, it's like, man, that'll be a great one. And then it just kind of loomed in the corner for all year until right now.
I think that part of it was 2020 kept slapping us around. Like, we kept getting in that face with 2020, and it was like, oh wow, this is a great one for Job, or this is a great one for the enemy's noose. And like, all of those really felt applicable.
Timely.
Yeah. Well,
and I think too, the last several series have been so good that when you call in that, like, that middle reliever to come in after the starters have been doing so well, you're like, yeah. And here we go. Here's where the momentum
is. We've got the Bartolo Colon of
like, who is this guy? Right, Inward Fire. What is that? A cave and a torch?
The series is 40 and overweight, but he's still on the mound. It's good.
But it turned out to be, and we should say, getting to this past week, thank goodness for Rahab. And that story being so sensational. Mm-hmm. And this has been part of what I think God was out for all along, is that it's really going to be a series of stories of people who chose to do pretty sensational things in response to their environment. That does feel timely. Like, it isn't really convenient, but we're going to do this anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And I was excited getting to listen to you kind of tell the story of Rahab. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But also, behind the veil, we were just planning a little bit of Drew's talk for this next week.
Austin, the veil is torn.
The veil is torn.
There is no veil. We've destroyed it.
top to bottom.
Yeah, it's been shredded.
You remember when you were at like vacation Bible school or church camp and that was, and it tore from top to bottom and you're like, what? Oh, got it.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to get baptized again. So anyway.
But in the beach this time.
So anyway. Well,
he's from
story.
Arkansas, so it would have been like a nasty pond.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like the.
Let's calm down from Petagene and go get in the river.
The Caddo River. Thank you.
That is not how people from Arkansas sound.
No,
that's
it's a little more Texas.
A little more.
Anyway, so do we want to talk about Rahab? Like, I love that story. I thought it was good.
Pretty crazy. Yeah.
Were you in the room yesterday, Drew? I didn't see you.
So I was in the children's room, like basically keeping the sanity,
the children at bay.
Yeah, exactly. So I was not in.
What's
the
harder, dealing
room
with foreign dignitaries or? Is that a word?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a word.
Oh, are they nice. Still dignitary?
I don't know.
I don't know.
They all act like children. So,
Drew's got
them
tattooed on his
politicians,
back.
Children. They there's a lot of like cross children. Training that's involved with that.
Yeah, that, this is how do you police the world? Hang out with toddlers. That'll get you prepared.
I was fortunate enough to see Ben online, and then because my baby was not. It was just not going to do two services back to back. He was not doing a nap and. So I was holding him and keeping the kids at bay in the children's room. However, I got to listen to Ben online, and then even more impressive was that I got to meet Ben in his wood shop and talk about his message. Okay. Kind of like Jesus the carpenter, but Ben the carpenter.
Oh,
it's like a...
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. That's why I picked that hobby.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah.
Hey, my name's Ben. I'm a walking cliche. Yeah, we did get to hang out on Friday. So as long as we're going behind the scenes, this is how the story went. So Cleek and I exchanged some text messages. I was trying to be prepared. You guys know I like to be ahead with all my plans, make sure everyone's informed about what's coming next.
It's be just punctual wondering. At every opportunity
closing
that you
all
can
loops.
Possibly yeah, surmise.
That's one of my things. So I sent... Because of our history of friendship, I sent Cleek a text about meeting me out at the shop, and I put that word in there tomorrow, but he had a little bit of reader bias, and that I never planned 24 hours ahead, so he thought I meant, like, right now, meet me out at the shop. So he swings by a local sandwich shop, gets me a sandwich, and then is trying to make his way out to this particular shop, and he asks for the gate code, and I'm like... You, for tomorrow, like, wow, you're being really prepared too. And then he just sends me two words. Dang it. So he's out there early. So fast forward to the next day. On Friday, he's trying to meet me out there. I don't get his phone call. He's at same said gate and is trying to get in. Sits there, from what I can tell based on text message history, about 28 minutes before I respond. He's got another sandwich to bring out to the wood shop.
Wait, what a first guy. Question, did you eat both sandwiches the day before?
No, I gave the other sandwich away.
Gave it away. Yeah, yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's very, anyway, so yeah, so he brings another sandwich out. We sit there and talk for a second and we get distracted. I'm going to show him something outside of the shop, leave my sandwich sitting on a flat surface in the shop.
I already know.
The multiple dogs at the shop devoured the sandwich. I got about 3 bites into the sandwich and then the dogs ate it. So.
I too have sat at that gate for long periods of time. We probably should just have a universal code for that gate. Can we put it out here?
Yeah,
actually?
Let's not do that.
It's not our gate.
It's not our gate.
There's two gates, and they're in the middle of nowhere.
And
like,
I got
in there. I was like, Ben, what are we guarding? There's nobody that's coming out.
And you have to get down that horrible road to get there.
Oh, man. Yeah.
There might as well be a moat to
you
get
have
into
to,
that
yeah.
house.
You only go there on purpose. So, yeah, but Cleek and I got to hang out at the shop. That was fun.
And y'all talked about Rahab.
And we did talk about Rahab.
Yeah.
So I was so eager to talk about Rahab and the story that I got there a day early.
Yes. And here we are on the podcast now discussing the same story. So I took a little time to storytell this because I thought as I was reading it, you know, the Old Testament is oral history. So it really kind of thins it out if you're just going through verse by verse. And there's so much detail there. Maybe I took a little bit of liberty with some things that I said as far as describing him as a newly appointed general, that kind of stuff. But I would be interested to hear y'all's response to that.
As far as Joshua was part of the story?
Well, just the way that we handled it, how we talked about it, what stood out maybe. I'm intrigued by that.
I think Joshua was intriguing to me, first and foremost, just because of the role that he plays in the history of the nation of Israel. Because, like we know, they, you know... By that time, they had had Moses for so long. Moses had been leading the people. We know all of those stories, and so Joshua is intriguing to me, just because he gets to watch this great leader lead for so long, and then he's kind of put in the thick of it. But also, and you mentioned it yesterday morning, he was living with this like 20-year length of time where he and Caleb had done everything right. It didn't come to fruition, and he got to sit in that and finally get to do it well. But it was 20 years later, you know? Like, I was sitting there thinking, man, that has got to be the most frustrating thing to know that you did what you were supposed to do and still didn't get to reap the benefit of that. So,
anyway. Yeah, that's it was a difficult part of the story for sure, because he had to pay the penalty for something he didn't even really do.
Right, exactly.
There was a larger timeline, you know? It was the typical hurry up and wait, as they say.
And when you put time to it and you start really, like, thinking about 20 years, right? Like, it really has a weight to it. Like, man.
Yeah. And he handled it. Apparently he handled it very well. I didn't have time to go into this. Although it's pretty timely for me. I mean, Josh was the guy after the guy,
right?
You know, it's like kind of what you were alluding to, Austin. And, that's a difficult place to lead from when you have this iconic figure, and Vertical Church has that iconic figure in Philip Thurman. The guy that comes after the guy usually
screws up.
He doesn't. I mean, what I said to Philip when he was here and we were talking about this frequently, I said, the guy that comes after the guy doesn't last long. That's just how it works, you know? But for Joshua to be able to ascend to that leadership level, but then to have to make these huge decisions, pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. I wonder for the people, I was in second service. I wonder for the people sitting in the room, if the weight of that kind of wore on them the way that you wanted it to, you know, like you said something to the point of like, when things get difficult, we retreat to our default, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's one reason why Joshua is so intriguing, is like, man, this guy had to make those difficult decisions. And it made me wonder, like, as far as the people in the room, the people that I'm doing life with on a regular basis, what are the defaults that we're regressing into, and how often don't we make the difficult decisions to actually get to see what God has for us? Does that make sense?
Yeah, good call.
That was what was written on my notes.
I think what I would have done is I would not have sent two spies. I would have gone with two spies. I would have had to have exercised some control. Like, this went totally upside down the last time we did this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and let these two yahoos figure this out, you know? And how differently would the story have played out if Joshua would have been there trying to exercise control, you know? So there was so much in that story that I wished I could have talked about, but it didn't serve. Here's what I had to figure out, and I think I'm still struggling with this, even on this podcast. Does it serve the purpose of the people, or does it serve my purposes? And this is something we have to sift through as communicators, as people on a church staff. Like, is God trying to use this part of the story to talk to me, or is he wanting to talk to everyone? You know, that's kind of hard to figure out in a story this dense.
Well, even like with that, so one of the questions when we were talking about Rahab and the story, and when we were deep diving in the workshop, you brought up the word belief, right? Like, she believed. And I asked you, what was the distinguishment between using that word and that language versus faith?
Yeah.
And I think Joshua kind of is in that same boat, right? Like, the with sending two spies versus him going himself, like, where the belief and the faith line come into play.
Yeah, I think what I said in the shop that day was that Rahab had some evidence that she points to, like, because of these things, I've seen what's happened, and I believe that the same thing is going to happen here. But what you were bringing up is that New Testament passage that I intentionally didn't go to, because every Christian in the room was waiting for it in Hebrews, you know, that it was her faith. It was her faith. And maybe we're splitting hairs just a little bit there, but I think what I was trying to impress upon the people of our community is, at some point, you have to make a decision whether you're going to believe that God is who he says he is. And that's why Psalm 115 kind of came into play there, especially with that idea of control. There's a lot of us wandering around today in our society, in our culture, and we put these parameters around God that actually aren't good. I mean, we're talking about that in Face the Nation. That's November or late October.
October.
Yeah. So we're leading struggling through that right now, how to address politics inside of our community, because this church in particular, most churches would steer clear of it in order to be safe and to not offend. But it feels like the time calls for us to make commentary on that now, you know, but those sorts of things are tricky.
Yeah. And I think even that statement in Psalms, like, you know, he's God and he does what he wishes, that whole thing, you kind of felt that fall on the room, like, I don't know if that's good or bad. You know, like, I think that's a good thing. But
well, that's one of those things we were reading through the Old Testament as a staff sometime in a past life. I don't know. 2020 has been so long. and like, even like we're, you know, you use this phrase all the time, Ben, we're professional Christians and we were still wrestling through that. Like, like even like we get it and yet it's still hard to hear. Cause like we try to operate on these morals a lot of times defined by like what the world says is good or bad.
Yeah.
But we forget oftentimes that, you know, God's justice is God's justice no matter the situation. You know, if he's going to eviscerate an entire town, that's his prerogative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Two people swallowed by the earth.
Right.
For the mistake that they made. Well, I mean, like how many people in that crowd that saw that happen should have also been swallowed by the earth.
Yeah.
But God was up to something that we kind of don't understand there. So
Ben and I talked about that a little bit 4th of July weekend when we were talking about just the sovereignty of God and how it's just, I mean, he is unfathomable in a lot of ways. And
wow,
so
you pronounced that very well.
Really did.
It's
a hard word. I was waiting and he said it really well, like unfathomable.
He has somebody whispering it in his ear. I'm pretty sure.
I actually walk around with them.
Yeah.
But yeah, just
there it is.
back on beep boop. So back on key. So the guy got a little distracted in my head. No, but we were talking about just the sovereignty of God and exactly to Chase's point of sometimes God, like, he's going to do what he wants, and we just have to be that person that is like in receive mode. We're listening, and we're trying to interpret the best we can of what God wants to do with this disposition of the world. But sometimes it's just something that we can't comprehend from our position.
Yeah, I'm so bad at that. Like,
yeah, well, oh, yeah. We all are. My gosh,
I try to outthink God all the time. I'm like, oh yeah, I got what you're doing, God. Perfect. And God's like, you have no
clue, don't even,
man.
Yeah, man, you can't even see over the fence, you know, like, and I think it shows that God is very grace filled with us when we get into those moments, but it just feels like, and I mean, this isn't a podcast about the election, but we might as well start priming our community to talk about that. We just walked out of a meeting, so it's on the top of my mind, but, this word that came up a lot on our trip to the mountains, Drew, is binary, you know, that you have these, you have one of two choices. And that's it, you know. Well, if God or Jesus puts you in that situation, you can be rest assured that it's a great binary decision.
Yep.
But the one that we're being placed in as a nation right now, people digging in and choosing sides and all of that. I mean, and what's and so enlightening to me is that none of us had any idea as we were, you know, singing in the new year for 2020 what it would contain. Yet we believe that the one decision we would make as we're voting is going to determine the next 4 years of our nation, as if God has no control over what may happen either way, you know? And that's kind of a thing that we've been baited into a little bit that I think we need to back up from. We need to think about from a little bit larger perspective. I mean, we have to make a choice, obviously, but look at how God cared for this nation. And the very point I was making, not America, this nation of Israel.
You mean we're not God's chosen nation?
Wait a minute. In God we trust. It's on the change that we don't have anymore. But look how God cared for this nation. So there's no stories of who was elected. God is appointing these people and the spies are sent. It's very perilous. Everybody's back home waiting what the report's going to be. And then they come back, and what's not contained in the biblical narrative is once these spies report to Joshua, he says, where did you hear that from? And then these spies have to say, well, we stayed with a prostitute last night. She said,
like, that's not what you want to tell your leader.
Yeah.
To start,
like, wait
off
a minute.
With.
Time out. Is that, say that one more time? You know? So I don't know. I just think it's in our best interest as a people to back up and see the way that God operates, even on a national level, and take that into where we're headed as a country.
So we should have listened to Monica Lewinsky.
Who said in her TED Talk, I can't remember.
Me either.
It was a good TED Talk, though.
It was. Yeah. It's highly watched. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Just trying to derail us. End of the segment?
I mean,
might as well.
What up, magnificent Mitch? Miraculous Mitch?
Fabulous Philip? Fabulous. You're fabulous now.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I got a PH, but you can only find F words.
What? That, wait, which Philip are you talking about? Because I'm also a Philip.
You're Philip?
I'm Philip Andrew.
Whoa.
Yes. You go by your middle name too?
Speaking of presidential.
Is it not the worst thing in the world? Do you not question what your parents were thinking every time you have to do anything legal?
Am I the only one here with a normal name?
Back in the day, it wasn't as difficult. Now, in adulthood, it's difficult. But when I was younger, I could sign things as Philip Cleek. And, like, technically, like, I was good to go.
Are you a single L or a double L?
I'm a single L.
Wow.
Biblical.
No way.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right.
How odd? That is odd. It's actually pretty common.
I don't hear that often. Mm-mm. Anyway.
Anyway, Mitch, you want to ask us anything?
Yes. I have several questions for you to answer.
Is it as spicy as presidents? Oh, I need to apologize. I totally misread Wikipedia last week. Andrew Jackson was like a million years old by the time he got in office.
That's okay. He didn't make it.
You're
anyway.
Telling me that everything on the internet is inaccurate.
Oh, come on.
Listen, Wikipedia gets a bad stigma still. They have nice things now.
We also great research left tool. Out that H.W. had played first base at Yale. So he was an athlete. I think he was old when Yale. He went in.
And it was first base.
Anyway.
Yeah. Can I say something? That question was probably the most intellectually spurring question I have heard on this podcast.
It was fun. It was
I
a lot
listened
of fun.
To it the whole way through, and I was engaged the whole way
I'm
through.
I'm really glad, because I thought people were going to jump
no,
ship.
No. As an objective observer, like sitting perfect. Out there listening to it, I was like, I like this question, and I like all the different perspectives that people are bringing. Like, y'all thoroughly thought that through.
So that means we're reaching our demographic.
That's right. Were we right? Did you agree with us?
I agree. I think that we overplayed the youthfulness of President Obama, just because I think generationally people these days, if they get socked in the mouth, like, they're not used to it. Whereas some of these guys, 30, or we'll go way back even, like Roosevelt and stuff like that, gets hit in the mouth. Oh, he's been hit in the mouth 100 times. Yeah. Like, it's just like no big deal. To him. Mean, he's probably got
where were you
jaw.
Last week?
For the sake of full disclosure, we just threw in Obama because it was spicy.
No, that's what I thought. So I was fighting it pretty heavily, but then I was like,
well,
wait
we
a minute.
Won over with the technology.
Yeah, you're right about the advance. Like, you know, Roosevelt's going to get in there chewing tobacco. Obama's going to have like the energy gel.
And that's right.
I feel like Obama would be quick, though. Waiting. I mean, he may not get it, would be that one punch that got him out, but I feel like it would be on into the fight before he actually got
okay,
that.
Okay, we've already done this question.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Sorry,
this episode.
Can't relive it. Version 2. Okay, all right. We have a few questions this lovely morning. What is one common myth about working at a church that you want to debunk?
Whoa.
That we should or that we want to?
What? There's a lot.
What is one common myth about working in a church that you would like to debunk?
I mean, I feel like we do that a lot already. So it needs to be really like internal cultural thing. I mean, like we debunk the fact that we're the most spiritual people here. We do that all the time. So that would be the first one.
Oh, yeah. The smartest person at Vertical Church has never been on the stage.
Right.
I think...
No, not even close.
Being the person that doesn't work at the church, so I don't know what you guys do every day, I think there's almost like this Oz curtain type thing where people are like, do these guys really do anything besides Sunday morning?
Yeah, I was trying not to say that because that feels a little self-indulgent.
Don't
but
ask
like,
Michael McQuillan.
I do, like, most of my work is definitely in the middle of the week as compared. I'm more of a volunteer on Sundays in that.
Yeah.
In that
at least 3 times a year, I answer the question, so what do you do full time? Seriously.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Like, this is cool, man. I didn't realize you did this. Like, what do you do full time?
I put your tithe in my pocket.
Like, well, I hit people like you in the face. That's what I do full time.
You and Obama.
That one would be up there.
That's up there.
I think one of the myths too is that because people fill in that space with, they always fill it in with spiritual things. Like that we're always sitting around like having Bible study or praying together. We're usually arguing about cultural things or strategizing about how to make this a better church.
We were looking, so recently we've been looking at houses and we have a lovely realtor that we really, really like. But she kept saying things like, there's plenty of room for like y'all to do Bible studies in this dining room.
She never, it's because you're a pastor. She I never guess. Did that with me.
I was like, I don't know what you think I do.
Kids never set foot in here.
Yep. Well, that's not true. I can't say that.
Here's another one that we actually get paid a lot of money. People assume that we get paid
really?
A lot of money. Yeah.
That is definitely a common myth, or at least a common thought.
Well, really? I think it's a misconception specifically for us. I think there's plenty of churches that have higher paid staff members, so we don't work here for the money, right, Ben?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was checking my bank account. What'd you say?
We saw the truck.
Yeah. So the hyper spiritual. Oh my god.
What's on your feet?
Turn that mic off. I've got something to say. The over spiritualization and then kind of the money side that we just like people throw money in a box and then we just live our best life now.
Yeah.
That kind of bothers us a little bit.
I think for me, and this is really not pointed. We don't try and make a habit of being super political here, but I think that often I have people ask political questions thinking that because we work at a church, we are ultra conservative in every aspect.
And good point.
One thing that I really love about the staff here at Vertical is that we are very well-rounded, not even just in like a political stance, but the way that we think about things, the way that we digest articles and just different information. Like, I really appreciate that about the staff, how well-rounded we are in that
respect.
You're
allowed to have a balanced approach as a paid staff member of a church.
I have had people come to me because they know that I'm a pastor at a church and say, so like, why did you vote for Trump? You know? And it's like, I think that it's just an assumption that we would be very conservative.
Which is so funny because you walked into my office this morning with a book written by an atheist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This guy has a point.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. So I guess that maybe that would be one of the big things too, is that it's just assumed because we're at a church, and we probably should say in Mississippi.
Right.
That we're ultra conservative. Well,
or that we have one frame, like one mindset on everything. And I think that the bigger, the broader point there is that we are very well-rounded, and it's kind of hard to put our staff in a box in any way, but especially politically.
I can tell you as a guy who's sitting in my position at the table, if we come to a consensus too quickly on something, I get very nervous. Yeah. Like, this isn't us. We should have argued this out way more.
You should watch us argue over lunch.
Is not supported here. That's what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, if I don't know. See us fight, ask where we want to go to lunch.
Yeah, those are kind of the top ones. I don't know that I
can't think of anything else.
Yeah, thankfully I don't walk around just with a beef about being viewed inappropriately.
We have other good questions.
Okay.
Here's one. What is something that you do every day without fail?
Brush my teeth.
That's a good one.
That's not true. Sometimes I skip it.
I can't say that. Yep. When I'm outdoors.
Not during the work week.
Yeah, when I'm
outdoors. Like if a Saturday goes really well, I don't even think about it.
Every day without fail.
Drink coffee.
That's not true. That's
coffee. I have to have coffee every day.
Coffee's on mine too. Give me something quirky that people wouldn't necessarily know.
It's mine, but I can't mute it because it's coming through my computer.
Man, you are slipping, Chase.
Well, I can't help it. It's coming through my headphones.
So it's got to be quirky?
Well, it's just something that people wouldn't expect. Like, obviously, we all drink coffee every day. You know, like, I'm going to make my Chemex every morning.
Okay. I use shoe trees every day.
Oh.
Every day.
I do too, actually.
Do you really? Yeah. No way.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, I thought that was going to be super quirky.
Yeah, but that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe not every day, but
what is a shoe tree?
Oh boy. It's a device that you put in your shoe that keeps it in its correct shape, and it's usually made of a type of wood that absorbs moisture.
Oh, that's not what I was picturing. I was picturing like a standing... Yeah, with
too.
Branches coming off that you hang
like
your
a bottle tree in a yard.
That's Ben's decor.
No, it's a shoe tree.
Okay, speaking of my closet, something I do every day is I walk the dogs every morning, and then I'll be getting dressed, and Charlie, our lab, always comes in the closet, and I always say to her, "Where is my super suit?" Off of The Incredibles. I don't know why, but I do it every single day. Every single day.
That's pretty stupid.
Yeah, it is.
you just transcended quirky.
I wouldn't have thought of that had you not said that.
All right, Cleek, you're the guest.
The thing that I do every day that's quirky is that I get a blank piece of printer paper, right? And I trifold it. So where it's basically as wide as your hand. And then I make my to-do list for the day on that.
Oh, I thought you were going to do like the thing back in middle school where it's got the numbers. And
oh, yeah. Today I will. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Pick a number.
You're going to marry Princess Diana. Too late.
Sorry. No. So I do the to-do list on that. And then if I have to, I have like breakout columns like four times and things like that. It's been a weird thing I've been doing for years, but prior to like having technology and a phone. And I will even put things on my phone, but I've got to like write it out. I've got to like sit there and see it in ink
I've
in
never
front of me.
Seen this, actually. Where do you hide it? Is it in your back pocket?
It's in his wallet.
Well, right now it's on my kitchen counter. Like, that's where it's at today. But like, so it drives my wife really crazy because there'll be like these trifolds everywhere, like from like days and days. She's like, why is all this trash everywhere? Like, just throw your paper away at the end of the day. And I'm like, well, I didn't get all the things done, so I got to get that list. And she's like, you're so sick.
That is
you're
pretty quirky, person. But you didn't say super suit, so I think Austin wins.
I don't have to tell you. Next question.
Okay, next question. This is a good one. I actually like this one. How much do you typically tip?
Stay on your microphone.
How much do you typically tip at a restaurant as far as percentage goes? Do you tip when you call in an order and pick it up?
So I usually do 20% and then round up or down depending on, so like I like to make it an even number in the total. So like if the bill is $7.53, I want to tip
47 cents,
$1.47.
Yeah.
To make it, you know, whatever.
I agree. Cause I hate seeing the extra cents. I don't know why, but I don't
ever use it. It just keeps me in practice.
I'm that way at the gas pump, but not at a restaurant.
I do the opposite. I don't do cents. So if it's $7.53, I'll just give $2 and make it $9.53. Like, cause I don't want to do the math there.
Yeah, 20%. Like, eh. Someone taught me a long time ago to take the tax and double it.
Yep.
But here that only gets you to 14, right?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't do percentage because I don't usually feel like that's enough if they've actually done a good job. Like I like to tip people. And also I think that, there's a little bit of stigmatism about pastors tipping, so you have to.
Oh, definitely.
And to answer the other question, I did not used to tip before I went in to grab a call in order, but post pandemic, if it's like a mom and pop or something like that, a lot of times I will, just because it's like, I don't know.
I agree. Since COVID started, I tip during pickup too, instead of just like taking it and leaving, because they don't have the same opportunities. But I will say that the 14% sometimes works out here, because I feel like there's a huge disparity in the service locally. Like, we have really great waiters and waitresses, or like they're just non-existent. I don't know like where the
Popeyes.
Middle tiers. Like,
yeah. Have you guys ever walked out of a place not tipping? Have you ever not tipped?
Yes. No, I've never not tipped.
I have.
I've done it two times as an adult. Two times. I was livid both times.
But here's the thing. My wife will hate this. If I'm going to do this, I tell them.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Man, that is aggressive.
What do you mean? Give me an example of that.
It's like, hey, I need, like, they know why I didn't tip. If not necessarily like, hey, I'm not leaving you a tip, but it's one of those things. It's like, hey, I need water. Hey, I need water. Hey, can I get some water? Like, you know why I didn't tip you if you didn't get
it. No, but how do you tell them? What do you mean by that?
I didn't mean like, hey,
You're not getting a tip.
I'm saying, like, they'll know why, because I was asking.
Oh, I thought you were, like, going to be, like, late. Yeah, you were at Native the other day.
I'm sending you my friend a text message. Incredibly poorly worded.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah, that's tough.
All right, do we have time for one more?
Yeah, I love the prompts, by the way. I'm a guy that's in the camp. I love when I, like, either on the receipt or on the screen, it's like 18%, 20%, 24%. I love those. So I'm like, bam.
Click and go. Yeah, but then I hate when I have to choose in front of the person.
Oh, I do too. I
hate it, because I want, like, sometimes I want to hit 18, you know, because you're a barber and I'm already.
See, that's.
I don't like tipping barbers.
Really?
Really? I don't mind that.
The $35 haircut?
I don't mind that. I don't.
No, dude, I guess it's because I know. I used to, like,
you're not
give
a waiter.
A good tip.
Yeah.
It used to be like, hey, like, you're getting a $15, $20 haircut. I'm going to give you $5.
Right.
And now it's like $35 and I'm going to give you another 20%. Like,
you wear your hair every day. You have a meal for 1 hour.
Yeah, I guess I'm the same.
I'm the wrong guy to talk
to
about barbers.
And to be fair, I know my barber. Like,
I wish I had a barber,
so we can talk it out.
Yeah, like, we know Andrew, so it doesn't bother me.
I don't view it as the individual barber when I'm giving a tip there. I'm tipping the experience that goes towards everything.
Yeah, but you have to get a haircut so often.
Yeah, I really do. Yeah.
That would make me do it less.
Really?
How often you have to get your haircut?
I like to tip, though.
Every 2 weeks, I'm sitting in the chair at Noble Barber, one of my favorite places.
I love Noble Barber, but I don't ever get to take in the experience because I'm so rushed. So, like, I'm like, man, I ain't getting any of this experience. No beer, no coffee.
That's
because
I go in the morning. They're like, you want a drink? I'm like, no, it's Tuesday at 8. Like,
I'm a pastor.
I need to come.
Of course, we don't drink
in public.
Be gone, Satan. Next question.
But you don't tip your mechanic?
No, but they make sure that you're tipped beforehand because they have a diagnostic fee. So there's a longer discussion.
Is there not a built-in tip and a $35 haircut for 45 minutes?
Man,
that's an incredible wage per hour.
I think if we had a barber on behind a microphone and said, okay, of that $35, how is it split up and what goes where?
I would be interested to know.
How much goes in their pocket is probably much less than you think.
Then I feel the same way about that as I do about waitresses and waiters.
So you should.
I'm going to get on a platform, run for mayor, and change the minimum pay for all these places.
Don't they just rent a chair, though? Like, it's like paying a mortgage for your business. So let's say the chair is like $1,000. Like, they just pay the owner of the business $1,000, and then everything else they keep, I believe, right?
Yeah, I don't know how it works at Noble
Actually,
Barber.
I bet
but
that is similar to like Bay's at a mechanic shop, because they'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
But you don't tip your mechanic, do you?
I give him a nice firm handshake and thank you.
I'm trying to think if I ever have.
Right? No, you have to tip the mechanic before they even start working. That's how that works.
I don't know. Okay, next question. Last question. This is a classic trap. That would have been a trap
yep,
for us.
Definitely.
That's an example of us
day to
day.
What is the most awkward thing you've ever said or done that you immediately wish you could take back?
I don't know. I buried that so deep.
There's something from high school, I know. There has to be.
I told my wife the honeymoon was over. That was an interesting day.
Wow. Oh, like the honeymoon period?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, was it when the actual honeymoon was over? Or
no.
Like you got home and you're like,
it did not coincide with any sort of fact
that
would have said.
What anniversary were you past that you said, no, yeah, we've been done
three
with
months.
The honeymoon
period? No, I mean, we were in single digits. I think it was like 3 years in, maybe.
Yeah, what? She got offended by that?
Well, let me explain.
How did the tone had to be
how did
very...
You say
she said we were driving, we were on a trip, and she asked me, she's like, do you feel like the honeymoon's over? Like, she meant, are you still as in love with me as you were when we first
That's
got married?
That's a trap.
That's a different...
And she meant it very genuinely, and I'm driving, I'm like, yeah. Like, that offensively, I answered that question. Mm. Yes, the honeymoon is over. And then the rest of the drive, I was...
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Wait, were you heading somewhere or were you coming home?
No, we were headed out of town on
a
trip.
Oh, good. You messed up.
Yeah, I messed up big time.
I don't know. I don't blame you too bad. That's an unfair question.
What?
It is an unfair
question. The cami ass?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What do you think? Do I look fat in this outfit?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, the same thing.
I mean, we're not 18 anymore.
What, you were two kids in? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want from me?
Golly.
So, I embarrass myself so frequently. I don't really know which one to
Ben was
from.
A part of my experience this week. So I had a situation where a friend had told me something in confidence. I'd gone to Ben, who also knew this person, and I asked him for advice to give this person. I'm trying to keep this very
generic
and ambiguous. And so as soon as I had gotten done talking to Ben, the person had keyed me up and texted me and said, hey, man, keep this strictly between us.
I'm That's like, their fault.
Well, I then text, thinking I'm texting Ben. I said, hey, Ben, don't say anything about this. I was responding to the person.
True.
So after saying multiple, like, four-letter words and...
darn.
Like, and darn and dang.
Well, shoots
and
five. Shucks. We're getting further. I don't know.
I immediately called person was like, hey, man, I love you, and I just want to get this out that I was asking for my own ability to give you good advice.
It was one of the most clique moments I've ever witnessed.
And I am not gossiping. I am not telling anybody. But Ben was like, I was like, Ben, what did I do?
How'd the person respond?
Very gracefully. In his credit, man, he was open. He's like, I really appreciate you even like asking somebody to give me good advice. And I was like, dude, I would have been like hot at you if it was me.
Well,
if
to your
the
credit,
situation was turned.
When you were talking to me about it, you did keep it very generic with me.
Correct.
You're like, hey, this guy's going to do this particular thing. You may want to, when you talk to him, you may want to this or that. It wasn't like, okay, here's the play-by-play.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were able to be honest with him after that.
But have you ever like shot a text message and be like, why won't iMessage let me delete this?
Oh,
like,
man.
Oh, yeah.
Gmail
why
does
can't
that
I pull
now.
It back?
Yeah, Gmail does. You have so long to do it.
I wish Apple would jump in there and allow you to do that.
Microsoft Outbox has that too. Like my work email, if nobody has opened the actual message, it allows me to retrieve it. And that has helped me a lot.
Because
I've just like sent things. I'm like, let's pull that one back. He hasn't read it yet.
Slack needs to get on the ball.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. One time I told Caitlin, and I didn't even mean it like maliciously, But one time we were doing something and I was like, she had said something or done something. I was like, that kind of sounds like something your mom would say. And it was like, I said it and immediately, and I really did not mean it in a bad way.
But how? Those, how do you not mean that in a bad way?
It was the way she said, I don't even remember what it was, but I remember the look on her face and I was like, oh no.
Note to self.
Yeah.
No.
It was a mistake. We weren't even married yet. And so it was
she still married you? Yeah. This girl's a saint.
There are certain things I know I can say to really just like ratchet up the degree of the conversation. That's one of those things.
Mm. Oh, I learned that day. And like, it was one of the, I wish I could just like pull back the words.
Yep.
It's tough. Chase, you got anything?
I'll be honest. I was listening to y'all the whole time. I was not thinking of anything.
Wow, you're so invested in our conversation.
I'm telling you, I'm the type of person that awkward with myself. Like, I can experience other people's awkwardness and just be like, yeah, it's fine. But when it's awkward in my situation and I'm uncomfortable, it's buried instantly, gone forever. It's not healthy, but it's where we are.
It's effective. Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. That's a good segment.
Maybe that was in the right key. I don't know. I should... never mind. Hey, recommends!
It's my favorite thing Chase says. Hey,
every segment. Recommends.
I'm not over it. You are. Austin.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I have a few.
A few?
I hear Groat pulling up.
I do hear Groat pulling up to the back door.
Yeah, he sure has slack though, so we'll see if he...
I didn't slack it.
Oh my gosh.
Go ahead and do that, Chase. All right, before you do the recommends, we do have to say, as we do every episode...
I said we just let him walk in.
Yeah, why not? It's say, thanks, Janice.
He's coming around to look at the window.
He is checking in the window. Yeah. We say, thanks, Janice, because this was her answer to an over-commercialized Christmas. You have something you want, something you need, something you wear, and something you read. These are the four gifts that everyone gets each other for Christmas. We experience these things in our own life, and we believe that other people should experience them as well. Austin usually takes the first slot because, honestly, his recommends are the worst. Then we have to clean all that up. We usually end with Chase, who plans it in the moment, and it's better than all of ours. So,
How did that come up? Is it because I don't like ice cream? Is it because of books? Like,
it's all of the things that everyone really should like in their life that you don't like, ice cream being the chief among them.
I don't know. Groat told me the other day, we were hanging out Saturday night, and he said, you know, I also don't love ice cream. And I was like, nobody bashes Groat because, anyway, it's because
he doesn't open his mouth.
Yeah, that's true. Plus, he sounds much more wise when he does.
Let's be fair. Who could actually bash?
Welcome, Groat.
Yeah, who could actually bash Chris Groat? The man literally left our organization and then came back, and he's still one of our favorite people.
That's true.
Let's see how far can we push this theory.
Please don't.
Every 4 years, I just kind of see what happens.
It's just like Parks and Rec when Ben keeps leaving the accounting firm and coming back.
Yep.
Groat would be Ben.
All right, Austin, you have recommends. What are they?
Yes, I do. You know what you want to do? I think I learned this morning that you are going to want to put off your driving habits that you've gained in pandemic times and slow down again in school zones. Do you know how I know that?
My wife works in those
school zones. No, it wasn't even that. I was coming to work this morning and timed it directly with school traffic. Mm. And I got one of those hands from the crosswalk police officer, Madison PD, who we love. And he kind of did the whole like motion to roll down my window. And I was like, roll down my window. And he was like, quit it. Slow down.
No way.
It was one of those.
That's authoritative. Yeah, quit it.
Yeah.
What was your response? Did you laugh sir.
Yes, sir.
That is exactly how someone in authority in Mississippi would say that.
Yeah, don't tell my dad.
Quit it.
Yeah. I don't know what I said. I think I was just like, okay.
At least I don't know your last name.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway.
Did you tip him after he...
No, cops 18%? Cops make enough money.
Okay, they're just like pastors.
They're just like pastors.
Yeah.
You know what you need? I think as a society, we need to get rid of the practice of writing checks. The other day, coincides with our acquisition of a household, somebody said, hey, I need a check for this. And I was like, yeah, all right. And then I had to sit down and write a check, which I have not done in a long time, and fought to not have to Google how to do it. Like, I sat down with this check and was like...
It's like addressing an envelope. Yeah, I think I'm doing this right.
I'm almost positive I'm doing this correctly, but why are we still doing this? If you can't receive money online, your business shouldn't work.
What does the MP stand for on a check? Does anyone know?
MP? Monetary policy?
Is it MP? Is it MP and then blank? Hold on.
I don't know.
Hold on.
I haven't
seen
just
that. Had a device... That had if all we only the had, answers yeah. right in front of
if we
us.
We just okay. had a Google machine.
Yep.
Do you have an answer? MP.
All right.
Well,
you continue.
This one just okay. says memo. Yeah.
I don't have a where, I don't think. Yeah, I don't have a where.
I would assume you would recommend wearing a mustache. You're back in the mustache game.
Fall's coming.
Is it a seasonal thing for you, obviously?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's
you're getting ready for campfire weekend.
I'm excited yeah. for just cooler weather.
In yeah,
me too. No
agreed.
Doubt.
I'm ready. We need to tell Mississippi that fall should be here by now.
All right. Do you have a read? Sam Harris is not allowed.
I do have a read. So I've been reading The Starfish and the Spider, finally.
What?
It's one that I got back early quarantine.
Yes.
It may have been you that recommended it to me, Drew, but I finally started reading it, and I'm about halfway through, and it's intriguing.
Man.
The whole decentralized organization thing is, it's intriguing. So I would say if that's up your alley, it's definitely worth your time.
The MP is where you put your signature, but I still don't know what it stands for.
I don't know. So get Money Starfish person. In the Spider, get rid of checks.
Who I can't remember who wrote that book.
Ori.
Well, it's the only one out there.
Larry
Search
Lobster.
The title. Yeah.
Brofman?
It's actually something we're trying
is
inside.
Is it
Ori
Brofman, I think?
Yeah,
something
maybe.
Like that.
It's we're trying that actually inside the hangar. So we read that book. Cleek gave me that book. I actually read it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're trying to implement that inside of the hangar actually.
It's mm-hmm. it's interesting. It's definitely intriguing. So that's not everybody's gonna love that, but yeah. I'm enjoying it.
I don't know.
It's not easy to implement, is it, Ben?
No, because you literally have to take the step of decentralizing, which means you have to take
Let
your
it go.
Preferences.
Which for yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, and like, you end up taking yourself almost completely out of the mm-hmm. equation type
right,
thing, which
right.
is. I'm not good at
so. Most, yeah. Most leaders who are egomaniacs have a lot of trouble with that. Or yeah. control freaks.
Yeah.
I fall into that category. So. Yep.
Anyway, that's all I got.
All right, Cleek, you're up.
Okay. So something that you need. So I am on a weird reverse COVID schedule. So while everybody else has been out of work for the last several months, I've been fully in work, never getting a day off. Mm. And so now I'm in this weird situation where I was supposed to be gone doing a residence military education course, and I'm not doing that anymore. I'm doing it from home, so I get to stay at home. So
with relaxed grooming standards.
With relaxed grooming standards, so I have a beard. So, but the weird part about it is I'm such a creature of habit that now like I'm having to rebuild my whole routine. So what I'm putting out to people is you need a routine. Like you have. And for me, it's completely different now because I'm like stay-at-home dad / remote work, and this is a whole new thing to me. So getting that balance has been key. So I'm putting it out there. Everybody needs to find a routine right
okay.
now. So one thing that you want, so I think it was maybe Chase recommended Goodthreads, the shirt, right?
Well, and the underwear, I believe.
Was
Goodfellow?
Goodfellow.
Yeah,
yes.
From Target?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they also make hair care products.
They do.
Oh, yeah,
and
they do.
They're
phenomenal.
They do all the things.
I use their body wash.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did I put you on that?
Maybe.
Ooh, I think we were talking.
I'll give you credit.
I'm sold out.
We were shopping together.
Goodfellow,
like,
they're great.
Hygiene products.
Yeah, well, they're great price, and they're pretty close in quality to some of the middle-tier hair stuff. There's obviously, like, people you can pay $50 for a thing of hair wax from your local barber. But Goodfellow has some great stuff.
Shots fired.
That's it.
Look out, Rizzle. Chase is coming for you.
Most of my reads, you know, I'm not in a reading portion that would be, I don't think that it would be applicable to all
yeah.
peoples because it's
do
a
it
lot of
week.
Like educational
no,
stuff.
No, just go
oh,
ahead.
Go
I'm
going
to bow out okay. respectfully of the read portion.
What? I just okay. read a lot of scripture.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I read a lot of things about history and war, and nobody else wants to read that, so...
Well, I don't know. A lot of people.
They're all around this table.
All right, so I'm up.
Sure.
Okay, am I allowed to combine want and need?
You're the pastor.
Chase?
Oh, somebody did all four in one thing.
It was wrestling. I'm not going there. So who cares? Let me just take a brief, I'll take a brief pause. You want to get out of town.
Get out of here.
I went out of town. I had dinner with my brother in Oxford on Saturday night, which was crazy. Like, there's nothing more crazy that I've done in 2020 than to take a 2.5 hour road trip to have dinner and come right back.
Isn't that wild?
Right before Sunday, just adulthood.
That pastor gas money.
Yeah.
Fill up the F-150.
Exactly.
Philip.
Where was I? Yes. I don't know. Sorry, you interrupted me. So you want to get out of town. What I have discovered in the past couple of days is I believe that we should start a revolution that is VRBO, Airbnb based. I believe hotels have their place, right? And I have friends that own them, okay? But if you're going to travel, this part of our culture and how it's advanced is completely awesome to me. That people build these cottages and these places that are off the beaten path. You can pay like $100 or
even
less.
Do you tip the person that rents you the Airbnb?
After the pandemic, because boy, they're hurting.
Yeah, they have a lot of fees associated with it, but no, they don't ask for tips. They just build it into their price.
Like a mechanic.
We don't have time for this. We don't have time for this. So anyway, believe it or not, no matter where you're listening to this, if you just search within a 2 hour drive of where you are, there are going to be some beautiful Airbnb, VRBO places to be able to stay.
Unless you live in
Mississippi. Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
Maybe a little bit further than 2 hours for us. Yeah. But I would definitely say that you need to, the next time you're going to stay out of town, to pursue one of those places. I don't really have any new wares because I'm sticking with my Levi's 541 and $8 t-shirt approach to fashion. I've just bought a new round of those, so that recommend still continues. The read, I cannot remember the title, so you guys with your phones in hand will have to do this, but I just started this book 2 days ago. I'm 75 pages in. This hasn't happened in probably 2 years where a book actually did this, but the title is something like Think Fast, Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
Man. So I picked it up at Square Books in Oxford on Saturday. And this book is incredible. It's incredible. It's written by a neuroscientist who did all these studies about why we make decisions, how we make decisions. It'll just blow your mind.
Literally. You know who it is?
The guy's name is really weird. He won the Nobel Peace Prize years and years ago. Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, I think, is the title. It's got the cover has a pencil on it. Mm. So he discusses things like, I'll be very brief with this, but he discusses things like being primed for decisions. So if you walk into a room and they have set the room up where you have visualizations of money, like there's a piece of Monopoly money on the table, or a computer screensaver has a picture of money, or someone references money, then you will automatically make more selfish decisions. And they've proven this over and over and over again with thousands of people. So they did this in a room and they had a guy intentionally drop pencils, and the people who had been primed with language of money or visualizations of money helped the person pick up fewer pencils before they stopped. After that, they said in an experiment that they were going to go get somebody for them to talk to, and they needed them to set the chairs up. If they had been primed with money, the people naturally set the chairs further apart and closer together. How crazy is that?
Pretty crazy.
I read this after I started my talk in church yesterday talking about money. Anyway, just a fascinating idea.
That's funny.
I'm 70 something pages into this, the fact that we think we're in control of our decisions and often we aren't.
Or like our subconscious is being influenced regularly.
Yes, you have a primary system that makes decisions very quickly based on safety, and then you have that secondary system that's more rationale-based, but even the second system has a bias based on your first system. It's crazy.
How does personality play into that?
Personality can help you overcome some of that stuff, but really personality plays into system one, the things that you think about the fastest and first. Yeah, it's anyway... I don't know that everybody's going to pick it up and be like, this is amazing, what a light read. But when you start seeing the decisions you've made in your life could have been primed by something that happened in your story, and then when you think about it in relation to religion, where most of Christianity is built screaming at people to make better decisions, it's very thought-provoking.
Cool. Is that it?
Chase?
All right, I have two. I was tempted to just do one because no one had done Only Aware yet, but I thought of something else. Soapbox, short one. We use Amazon too much.
Oh.
Too much as a society.
All right, see you guys later.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is this one?
Including myself. Is this one? I think, based on what I'm asking you to do, it's probably a want.
Ooh. All right.
You're going to want to try your absolute best to, if you don't have good mom and pop shops around to get the thing you want, alternate online retailers that aren't Amazon. So like a quick example that applies to me is like buying camera equipment or something like that. Instead of using Amazon, I'm going to use B&H because like that's their stick. All right. So yep. I want to support them because if we let Amazon do what they want to do, B&H won't exist at some point.
Wait, so how will Bezos get to $1 trillion if you don't buy stuff?
Yeah, because that's true. That's the definition of success in modern society is someone has all the money.
I was against you at first, but I'm with you now.
Yeah.
Because there's certain things that you try to buy on Amazon, and you're like, this isn't what they do.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Shop local. I love it.
Yep. Plus, you want to, you know, there's customer support stuff, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, so just try your best to not use Amazon all the freaking time. Sometimes you gotta. I get it. I still do it. I'm trying my best not to.
Yep.
You're where? All right? You're where? This year.
It has to be strong because none of us have a where.
Yes, and those are dramatic calls.
Actually, I think most of you are probably already on board. This year, all right, it's been a hard year. Doesn't matter where you fall on any of the political stuff, what side you're on, corona, yada, yada, yada. It's been a hard year for everybody no matter what, all right? You're here. So this is a year for you to be cozy, okay? For your winter and fall wear, this is the year of the sweatshirt, all right?
Ooh, we're already there.
We're already there. We're light years ahead. That's okay. You can catch up. Go out and buy yourself like 3 or 4 modestly priced sweatshirts. Don't thrift them because that's what we do, all right? And we work at a church.
We need ours.
We need them.
If it says Atari, you stay away from that thing.
That's right.
Gosh darn it. Go out and get you some sweatshirts. Gildan, I know they usually are frowned upon because they're the cheap version. They make some great fitting sweatshirts.
I love the Champion ones.
Champion's the best. Get out of here with that Gildan stuff.
But I said modestly priced.
Okay, but you can buy Champion ones at the vertical store. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. Yep.
Plug.
Champion's the way to go.
They're exclusive. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are Reshmas?
I got out of the sweatshirt game in the 90s. I'm back in now. Yeah. Okay.
Megan, you're here. What brand is Reshmas sweatshirts?
Wait, no, we don't support Reshma's Home anymore. I've said that before on the podcast.
No, I just
we
have to prove quit you shouting wrong. Her out. You can't buy a Champion in the vertical store.
I just want to know, does Clique wear sweatshirts and what brand are
I
they?
I do. I do wear sweatshirts.
I bet you don't care about the brand. You just
I don't
like
even
the
know
design.
The brands. It's like whatever I get.
Yep.
It's
yep.
totally like
my
you.
Like, when you look at my closet, you'd be very underwhelmed. Like, I can fit all of my articles of clothing in one suitcase. I pretty much stay inside a circle of things.
You know who has the best bang for your buck if you're going to go retail sweatshirts? It's H&M. Those are modestly priced and the absolute softest sweatshirts I've ever worn, ever.
Do they shrink?
I haven't had them shrink.
What I like about the H&M ones is they don't shed. So, like, sometimes I'll put on, I think it's my hanger one, and I actually like it, but if I wear it with a black shirt, which I do every time I wear it, it sheds onto the black
all the
shirt,
way over,
and I
yeah.
have to grab a lint roller.
Yep.
So the H&M ones don't do
You're
that.
You're going to want a lint roller.
Sure.
All right.
See you next week.